Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the 143rd episode of Till Death Do Us Part.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Melissa. Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day.
The next day.
Right.
Because this comes out on, you know, tomorrow, which is the day after. But you know what? We might as well just keep saying Happy Memorial Day.
We're saying Happy Memorial Day because we are recording the day of.
Forthwith. I think they figured that out. I think it's a given.
Mm-hmm. So many rules.
Is there?
No.
Oh, okay. You guys may have noticed we did sign with a network and we now have ads. I know. But if you want to keep this one going, if you want to keep this podcast going, the 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
We needed to make a little bit of income, you guys. Sorry.
It's fine. Everyone does it. It's no big deal.
They do. We were one of the rarities for a while, but we got to do it, you guys. I'm sorry.
You cannot watch or listen to anything anymore without some form of ads.
I know. I know.
I like personalized ads. I would like to start getting into that because there are things that I would recommend and or use. And people that I really like, I do actually consider the ad. So I don't know.
Okay. Or you can just skip through them.
Or
you can join Patreon. All of our episodes are up there with zero ads. And then you get bonus episodes. And we are looking into doing an Apple subscription for no ads and bonus content. So I know there's probably like two of you that are pissed and never going to listen to us again, but we have to. If you like us, you understand. So there you go. We probably over-explained it, but you know, because I feel bad.
Welcome to the money-grubbing show.
We're
probably not making any money. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Oh, well. You ready to get on with the show?
Yeah, with that being said,
Daniel, you got some factoids for me?
I do.
Oh my gosh, you're cracking so bad.
All right, so my factoids are in and around related to forthwith the quote, "The life imitates art."
Oh, okay.
Meaning people write stuff or come up with a sketch that doesn't actually exist, and then shortly thereafter or many, many, many years later, it happens.
Are you talking about like The Simpsons?
No, not specifically.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah, that you could say that because that's a form of art.
Well, yeah, because they come out with episodes years in advance that actually start to happen.
Right.
It's very weird. If you look that up on YouTube, it's fascinating.
Yeah. So the question is, you could come up with a lot of ideas. Eventually, one of them's going to happen.
Like a podcast.
Or is it that people all of a sudden go, hey, that's not a bad idea. And then it kind of sets the wheels of things in motion. I don't know. Anyway. So one quick example of something like that, there was a journalist, William Thomas Stead, or Stead. He wrote in an 1886 piece of fiction detailing the tragedy of a ship sinking without enough lifeboats. And he said, quote, "This is exactly what might take place and will take place if liners are sent to sea short of boats." And then he also wrote in another short story from the early 1890s describing a rescue mission after a ship hits an iceberg in the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, all of those things happen with the Titanic shortly thereafter.
Yeah, that's wild.
So then you go, well, how is that possible? I don't know. I guess it could be possible. So he wrote it and then it ended up happening. But that's kind of the life imitates art a little bit. So what I found fascinating was I was thinking, well, what are the predictions that have been made that have come true? So 1974, they had, I guess it was a magazine, Saturday Review. Have you heard of that?
No.
It was a magazine.
I haven't.
So there was a nuclear scientist, Andrei Sakharov, and he wrote an essay. He was a brilliant guy, obviously, nuclear scientist. And he wrote about, quote, the creation of a single global telephone and video phone system, a universal information system which will give everyone access at any given moment to the contents of any book that has ever been published or any magazine or any fact.
Wow.
That was 50 years ago.
Wow, that's crazy.
Sakharov imagined it being accessed with, quote, individual miniature computer terminals, along with, quote, central control points for the flood of information. We got another brilliant guy, also wrote, same magazine, Wernher von Braun. He had nearly identical speculation, and he was 62 years old, and he wrote this 3 years before his death. He predicted that by 2024, humanity would have a network of interconnected computers in support of such operations as banking or ticket reservations. He goes on to imagine, quote, the average American household of 2024 will be equipped with an appliance that combines the features of a television set with those of a desk computer.
Wait, what year was that?
50 years ago.
This is the same guy?
No, this is a different guy.
Okay, but he said that
almost
50
identical
years ago.
Similar predictions.
Okay, I missed that part. Wow.
This guy's name is Wernher von Braun.
He sounds smart. That's a smart guy name.
Yeah. And this was, he wrote that 3 years before his death in 1974. Both of these were in 74.
Wow. And he called it a computer.
Yeah.
Wow. I know they did have computers.
They had computers.
Right? But they were like huge.
Yeah. Size of a room. Mm-hmm. And, but none of these things existed. They just,
wow.
Obviously televisions existed. So they put all this together in their head. So it's kind of interesting. Like now that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, just like when you watch Back to the Future,
mm-hmm.
and things are happening that we're in Back to the Future.
Well, Jules Verne predicted going to the moon.
He did, yep.
Before there was even airplanes.
Mm-hmm. And Doc Brown named his two sons Jules and Verne.
Of course, yeah, but that wasn't... it was made...
Just joking.
Yeah, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
So people put out the possibility... And then someone, I'm assuming, probably studied these guys mm-hmm. and read about it and it put the idea in their head. And they're like, you know what? I think I could make that happen. And then it happens. So did someone think it first, imagine it, and then it ends up becoming?
So he thought it, imagined it, wrote it out on paper, and then somebody else, man or
yeah.
woman, took that and was like, hey, I think
years.
We could do this
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Developed
That's
it.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I'm just contrasting, say, a guy that's going, hey, if you send a big boat out into the ocean and you don't have enough lifeboats and you hit an iceberg, this could be quite a tragedy.
Right.
And then it happened. So.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
About the Titanic that somebody had written
mm-hmm.
or had wrote a short story about the same exact thing.
Yep. And you'd think someone who's designing it would have also read that, or a consultant read mm-hmm. it and said, hey, you know, someone wrote about this and said, you got to really make sure you have enough lifeboats. But then, of course, humanity's ego gets in the way and they're like, we can build a boat that won't sink.
It's unsinkable.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know why they didn't have enough lifeboats on the Titanic?
Because of a view.
Yeah, because it blocked
oh,
the
I
view.
Oh, I was guessing.
No, it blocked the view of first
yeah.
class passengers.
No, but that seems like something that we would be so arrogant, because mm-hmm. that's what it is. It's arrogance and ego.
Definitely.
Like, oh, can't imagine who built this thing and blocked my view. Because a lot of the people, especially the upper class folk, they were all just completely obstinate.
How many times have we had a window cabin that's been blocked by a lifeboat?
Couple times.
And I'm like, what?
And I'm like, are you kidding me? I can literally step off of our balcony onto a lifeboat.
Oh, well, yeah, if we have those ones, but
somehow lower this cable by myself. No, not possible.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I forgot to tell you this.
What?
So that fellow that wrote that about the cruise liner sinking after hitting an iceberg.
Was he on the Titanic?
He was on the ice. He was on the iceberg. He was on the Titanic and died.
No.
In the sinking of the Titanic.
No. What was his name?
William Thomas Steed, Steead.
I wonder if he was invited by the White Star line. They're like, hey, fella.
Right.
You can come on our boat.
So here's the funny thing. After writing that, when you look at the boat and go, how many people are on the manifest?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it?
The boat manifest.
And they go, there's 750 million people on this boat. Seems like a lot. And then he's going around counting the boats and going, all right, so let's see. Based on the design of the boat.
He kind of predicted it. You'd think he'd do the math before stepping foot on the deck.
Right?
I mean, I definitely look at the lifeboats.
Yeah, but we've entered into situations where we go, this could end badly.
Mm.
Let's go anyway.
Not really.
Every time we get on an airplane.
Don't talk about it.
No, I'm just saying, like, hey, I know what we should do. Let's get a beer can, put giant jet engines on the side of it. We'll tie ourselves to the beer can because that will make sure we're safe.
Oh,
and let's light off these jet engines and take off. Everything's fine.
It's all fine. I love to travel, hate to fly. It's all right. That's why God invented Xanax. That my doctor won't give me anymore. She's like, Melissa, you're fine. Just get on the damn plane.
You did bring up The Simpsons, right?
Yes.
Have you heard this one?
What?
In a 1993 Simpsons episode, they created a spoof of Siegfried and Roy where one of them is mauled by the tiger.
Yes.
And that happened 10 years later. October 4th, 2003, tiger attacked Horn.
That was his last name.
Roy Horn, leaving him partially paralyzed and ending the show for good.
It was so sad.
Okay, so did the tiger watch The Simpsons? He was like, God, you know what? I never thought about that. But The Simpsons, you know, now that they mention it, I could finally put an end to this nightmare.
Okay, but let's talk about that being one of the ultimate love stories is Siegfried and Roy.
Loving the tiger?
No, loving each other.
They
were partners.
Were they really?
In life and in, yes, absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he watched Siegfried watched the love of his life get attacked by a tiger that they had hand raised from a newborn and then took care of him.
Wow.
I mean, it's an incredible love story. Actually, I should do that for Drunken Love, our
other
podcast that we have not had time to do. But we're going to do it this summer. We're going to
record
like 50 of them.
Here's the problem.
What?
At our advanced age.
Oh, Lord.
We have to, in order to drink and then do a podcast, that takes a lot of preparation.
Oh, my gosh, it does.
And takes a lot of days of recovery at our advanced age.
Shut
we
up.
Can't just drink and then be coherent anymore.
Can't do my job.
Actually,
the next day.
We're professionals.
Oh, are we? Okay. Well, thank you, darling. That was fun. Kind of. Daniel.
Melissa.
Are you ready for my case?
Well, now that we got all the deep thinking out of the way. These are deep thoughts from Daniel and Melissa in their padded room. Because that's where you get deep thoughts from, padded rooms.
All right. Well, this is the case of David and Penelope Jackson.
Oh, Penelope.
I know. There's a little girl where I work, and I call her Penelope.
So
adorable.
Honestly, the first time I read that somewhere, I read it as Penelope, and I didn't know that's how it was supposed to be pronounced. Was Penelope?
There's a character in one of those. Or is it like Broken Lizard, the guy that does Super Troopers?
Yes.
They did a horror movie called Club Dread or something
like
that.
Oh, yes.
And he calls her Penelope instead of Penelope. And so every time there's a Penelope, I say Penelope. But that doesn't matter. That is not what this case
is
about.
No, and I'm not picking on her. I'm sure she's a lovely person. I just, when I hear Penelope, I think, what an idiot I used to be. No, I still am.
No,
and I would read it to myself in my head wrong. So anyway,
and obviously,
David.
Penelope is the formal version of Penny, but I'm going to call her Penelope.
All right.
So there you go.
Just ignore everything I just said.
This case is also known as the Bubble and Squeak murder. I'll explain that.
Oh, boy.
So get ready.
Bubble and Squeak.
Bubble and Squeak. All our UK listeners are like, oh, my gosh, she's doing it. Oh, my gosh.
I kind of figured it's going to be something like that. Is that a food?
It is a food. Yes. All right. Well, on February 13th, 2021, before 9 p.m., a call came into the local 999 Emergency Services Center in the beautiful seaside village of Barrow, in Somerset, England.
Always sounds so idyllic.
I think it was. Or I think it is, actually.
Is that the right word? Idyllic?
Yeah.
All right. Ideal, idyllic.
On the line was 78-year-old David Jackson, and he was requesting immediate help, briefly describing that his wife of almost 25 years, 66-year-old Penelope Jackson, had stabbed him in the chest and he was bleeding, standing in his underwear in the middle of the kitchen. Within seconds, the 999 operator heard what sounded like David talking to someone else in the room. David said loudly, "You wouldn't dare stab me again." The next moment, the operator heard a painful scream and then another. All coming from who he believed to be David. The phone fell to the floor with a crash, but was soon picked up. The operator says, "Hello?" And he hears a woman's voice come on the line. For the next 18 minutes, the 999 operator has a conversation with David's wife, Penelope.
What?
Now, I'm going to reenact some of that with you, or for you, in the greatest Californian English accent I can muster. So be prepared to be astonished by my skill.
Okay, so are you going to act out Penelope and I'm going to act out David?
No,
or how
it's
are we
for
do this?
You, not with you. So I'm just going to act out Penelope.
Oh, gosh.
Because you need to hear the voice. Then I'm not going to sound exactly like her because I do talk through my nose, but she was 66 years old. So this is probably going to sound a lot like Mrs. Doubtfire, which you do better.
Do I?
I need to kind of get you into this space. Are you ready?
Okay. 18 minutes. The upside down 666 operator is talking to Penelope. Perfect.
Yes.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm obviously not going to do the full 18 minutes, okay. But here we go.
Well, hello.
There you go. "I've killed my husband, or tried to, because I've had enough." "Stop. Are you with him now?" asks the operator. "Well, I might go and stab him again." "No, don't do that. Where are you?" "Well, I am in the lounge and he is in the kitchen bleeding to death with any luck." Okay, so just stay on the line with me. Now, ultimately, madam, I'm listening to your voice, and you're the help I have available, so we need to help him, okay? And Penelope says, "No, I won't help him. I know this is being recorded. I am compos mentis, but I've had enough of him making my life misery. Madam, How many times have you stabbed him? And then she goes on to tell him that she thinks she stabbed him 3 times.
So you said 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that in 18 minutes, no one showed up?
No.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
Well, how far away do they live? It's an island, right? They're on the UK. How far could it be?
Right. It's a little seaside village in Somerset. So I think getting to certain locations takes a little longer than maybe here where we have a fire station every mile. I don't necessarily think that it's like that.
Well, but in this case, it's law enforcement, too.
Yeah, but they're looking for emergency personnel. So here in the U.S., emergency personnel means fire, paramedics, law enforcement. Like, everybody comes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There, I think it was just more emergency personnel, like paramedics.
Yeah.
So they're waiting for paramedics to get
there.
Sounds
like a lovely place.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah. The bungalow that they lived in was almost $1 million in our U.S. currency. So it was almost half a million pounds.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the pound sterling has
Well, when they bought
declined.
It. When they bought it.
Yeah.
It was almost $1 million U.S.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So she's talking to the 999 operator. And all he's trying to do is get her to go help her husband, and she's refusing. She's refusing to help him.
Well, it sounds like if he sends her back in there, she's going to finish him off.
Yeah, she's just going to stab him again.
I might stab him again.
And then she says something about that she can hear him moaning.
I bet.
So he's not 100% dead yet.
He's not doing well.
And the operator even asks her, like, go get a tea towel and put it on him to stop the bleeding. And she's like, no, I won't be doing that.
No,
like, she just refuses
not.
To do anything to help
towel.
Her husband.
Do we have tea towels?
We do have tea towels.
What the hell's a tea towel?
It's a dish rag.
Oh.
Like a hand
like
towel.
Like a tea bag towel.
No. Oh.
I don't know what that means.
All right. So at 9:27 p.m., police and emergency medical personnel are finally on the scene.
Okay, so later that afternoon.
And after banging on the bungalow's front door a few times, it is finally answered by your average middle-aged woman wearing her pajamas. She is asked to join the responding officers on the front lawn so that the paramedics can make their way inside to help the ailing man. And her immediate response is, oh, please don't. Because this is all on body cam footage, FYI.
Good day, ma'am. Would you mind joining us out here on the front stoop?
Basically.
Whilst we send in emergency. No, I don't know what they say.
No, I mean, it was very polite.
Why would you say, get your fat ass out of that room? I don't know. Is she... A portly woman?
No, I mean, okay, she's middle-aged, goes to the gym,
I'm just
works
trying
in
to think
yard.
About what an angry cop would say. Like,
no, they're never angry. They're very polite.
No, it's just a dying guy in there. Everything's fine.
Yeah. And
this
please,
is normal.
Please come out to the front yard so we can have a conversation.
Right.
And the paramedics can go in. And she's like, oh, please don't. Now, as paramedics rush by, Penelope says, with any luck, it'll be too late. Saying that she should have stabbed him a bit more.
Sure.
She then is asked basically about the situation, and she says that her husband David was an aggressive bully and nasty, and I've had enough. And then she continually asks the police to go inside the home to retrieve her coat because she's cold. Because this is February. It's a little nippy outside.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, she is handcuffed and placed in the back of a cruiser under suspicion of attempted murder. Because
okay,
he's not
he's
dead.
He's still
kicking.
Still doing it.
Yeah.
All right.
And she's still pissed about that he's not officially dead yet. So David and Penelope were married in 1996. Both had been married before. Actually, Penelope was David's third wife, and David was Penelope's fourth husband. but they had been married for almost 25 years.
You know, you got to keep trying till you get it right.
I think clearly. So. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, according to Penelope, her first marriage at 18 years old ended due to years of physical and emotional abuse, but her two daughters from that marriage do not align with Penelope's recollection of events, saying they never witnessed any violence when they were little, and the girls even lived with their father and his new girlfriend after the divorce, and Penelope paid him support. So I'm telling you about these past relationships because they kind of have to do with it.
Sure.
With David. Okay.
Penelope paid her ex-husband support because mm-hmm. the girls live with him.
Yes.
That's different.
Mm-hmm. Years later, Penelope was then divorcing her second husband after 6 years of marriage because he enjoyed the company of other men to women.
Mm. Yeah, you gotta... Oh, never mind.
Penelope's third marriage was to a man named Alan, with whom she had another daughter. During this marriage is when she met David, who was also married, and the two began an affair. Both were working for the army. David had worked himself up from a private in his teen years to a lieutenant colonel in the Royal Logistics Corps. And before meeting Penelope, David went to work overseas for the Ministry of Defense. Penelope was employed by the Department of International Development as an accountant.
Ah.
Now, Alan learned of the affair in 1993, and within days, he had taken his own life.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
She's that miserable to be with, huh?
No, not necessarily. No? Okay. So he had also worked in the military.
Gotcha.
And he was in Saudi Arabia, and he would travel a lot for work. And then when he got home, she told him about the affair and said it was because you were gone. And so I'm sure there was a lot of mental health things going on with him also. And then a couple days later, she found him in the garage. He had died from carbon monoxide.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was really sad, actually.
Yeah, I've been cheating on you because you've been gone. So, you know,
yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It's awful. Now, soon after, David divorced his second wife. And then in 1996, David and Penelope were wed, and he adopted Penelope's youngest daughter and raised her as his own. So the daughter from the third marriage with Alan. Now, during the course of their 25-year marriage, the couple lived in Germany and France and then relocated back to England to serve out their final years.
Mm-hmm.
And they had both recently retired. Now, to those who met the couple, they always seemed very happy and committed, enjoying each other's company. But according to Penelope, not everything was as it appeared. 3 years after they were married, in 1998, David's son from his first marriage committed suicide after he admitted to having an extramarital affair while his then wife was pregnant. And a few days later, he killed himself. And he left behind a suicide note saying that he did not want to be like his dad, a serial cheater.
Okay. Oof.
Yeah, that's a lot, right? There's a lot to this. Now, for the next few years, the Jacksons' marriage was turbulent at best because David fell into a deep, dark depression and obviously blamed himself for his son's death. Can you imagine?
No.
In a note, a suicide note, your son says, I'm killing myself because I don't want to be like my dad.
I'd rather be dead than be alive and end up like my dad.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Ugh. Now, David's depression turned to anger, which turned to violence toward Penelope. Now, during one family get-together, David held a knife up to Penelope's throat, and it took three people to get him off of her. And on one...
Oh.
Yeah.
So there's witnesses. To witness his...
Yes.
...behavior.
And then on one occasion, their daughter saw David push Penelope so hard up against a wall that the impact caused her nose to bleed. And he also smashed a glass candy dish that the daughter had bought for Penelope for Mother's Day when she was little. So if that is happening in front of people, imagine what might have been going on behind closed doors. Now, David did seek out help for his depression and his anger and did begin therapy, which seemed to really help.
Okay.
Kind of turned everything around. And the couple were then back to being the happy and loving couple that they were in the very beginning. People didn't witness any more violence or things of that nature.
All right. So it's everything's fixed.
And they began cruising regularly and taking vacations and spending summers in Spain.
Wow.
Like they had the ultimate kind of life.
Did you say, though, they were retired?
No, they were retired in, I believe it was 2020.
Oh, okay. Retired. So this is, yeah, all right.
But actually, he could have retired before her. I couldn't actually find that, but I did find that she had retired in March of 2020.
So at this point, they're still working and
they're
all that
stuff. They're still working.
Okay.
And traveling and living abroad for stints.
Okay.
So all seemed well, and then they were both retired by March of 2020, and then COVID hit,
yep.
And the entire country and world went on lockdown.
Sure.
Which only exasperated any tension or issues couples or families had within their homes, forcing people to be stuck in close confinement for weeks and months at a time. And during this time, there were significant increases in domestic violence and homicides. I did look this up, and in the UK, it almost doubled.
I bet, because they kind of went overboard, to say the least.
They really locked themselves down.
Well, the UK, unfortunately, is very, it's always seems like it's borderline George Orwell's 1984. Which, again, is kind of goofy, like we were talking about life imitating art.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of predictions, you know.
Well, it says that the National Domestic Abuse Helpline in the UK saw a 65% increase in calls between April and June of 2020 compared to the first 3 months of that year. London's Metropolitan Police experienced a rise in calls for domestic incidents, particularly from third parties. And victim support saw a 12% increase in domestic abuse cases referred to them in mid-May of 2020.
Oh, boy.
So there's a lot going on during that time. And during this time, David had a surgery in his brain to help replace a battery for an implant that he had received to help manage tics and trembling in his limbs because they had also found tumors in his brain and he had had, like prostate and bladder cancer.
Oh, gosh.
Years before.
Yeah.
So he was dealing with medical issues a few years before COVID hit. Now, after this particular surgery, there are significant changes to David's personality and behavior, and he became very angry and aggressive, which were totally out of character at this point in their relationship. So he almost reverted back to when his son had committed suicide that time.
So like pre-therapy work.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And on December 23rd, 2020, so we're, 9 months into COVID?
Sure, yeah.
Police were called to the bungalow on Parsonage Road. Penelope had called to let law enforcement know that she had locked her husband David in their conservatory after a fight they had over a remote control for the television.
That's usually how our fights start.
It's the remote control?
Yeah.
David smashed his way out of the conservatory with a fire poker and threatened Penelope with the metal object. Penelope even records the episode on her phone, but when police look at the footage, they actually see Penelope kind of provoking David to get a violent reaction. But she does have bruises on her arms, so they take David in. And he had also packed like a knapsack, or what do we call it here? A duffel bag.
Okay.
He had kind of packed a duffel bag and was going to leave, and then the police show up. But by the next day, David is back in the home after Penelope didn't press charges and she asked him to come back. And they go ahead and have a really nice Christmas with their families, like nothing had happened.
See, that always amazes me after some sort of violent altercation is then people go, well, let's celebrate Christmas. Like, what? How?
Yeah, I can't pretend. I'm not a good pretender. And then the next week, David has the voltage turned down on the implant. And then he has no recollection of what happened the night that he threatened Penelope with the fire poker. So that's like gone out of his memory.
He had the voltage turned down.
Yeah, the voltage was too high
and
on the implant.
Does he have like a dial?
I don't know how they do
it. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And things seem to go back to normal, but as normal as it can be while stuck in lockdown, I guess.
Now, I hate to just...
So what I'm saying is things seemed
fine
after that.
If that's what you can do then, imagine what we're going to do 20 years from now. If you can implant something in someone's brain who's having issues, mm-hmm. and you can change the voltage and alter their complete memory or even their actions, everything's fine. Everything's fine. What I'm trying to say is,
it's like we went from lobotomies
to
implants, mm-hmm. and then next, what's going to happen? They're going to do brain transplants.
Ooh. Good times.
Yeah.
Can't wait to get that robot wife. That'll be fun. Second wife. I'm not going to replace you. We'll just fill in the gaps.
Well,
something.
Stuck in lockdown. Things seem okay between the couple,
mm-hmm.
but obviously they're not.
No.
Because then we have David in the kitchen bleeding to death.
Sure.
And she's telling police, I hope he's dead.
This is a giant poop show, dumpster fire of a relationship.
So Penelope is put in the back of a police cruiser, mm-hmm. and taken to the local precinct. As she is getting out of the vehicle, she was told that she is now being arrested for the murder of her husband.
He did pass. He left us.
Yes.
Okay.
And her response was, oh, good. Mm-hmm. Then she is heard telling the arresting officer that her handcuffs are a bit too tight.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, people were saying that, like on Reddit and things like that, they're saying, well, she sounds drunk. She sounds like she's been drinking, which alcohol does play a big part of their relationship.
I'm sure it does. Yeah.
But to me, she sounded cold. She sounded like she's like shivering. Oh, good. Like that.
Okay.
So I think she was cold, not necessarily drunk, but that's my own opinion.
I don't know.
I think she was in her right mind, to be honest.
I'm trying to picture what she looks like, and I'm picturing kind of a grumpy, obstinate, stereotype woman who's kind of frail,
mm-hmm.
but has an attitude, you know,
uh-huh.
that sort of thing.
Here, let me get you a picture. Are you ready for this, sir?
I am.
This is Penelope and David Jackson.
Okay. Oh, nope. That's not what I was picturing, but.
They look happy, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't in 113 years imagine that. Everyone says a million years. That's too many years.
They're just your average white couple.
If I saw them, I'd be like, this is just a lovely English couple.
Yeah. And he's 12 years older than her.
Yeah. They look like someone you would bump into on a British cruise.
Oh, 100%. They look like that American couple that was from Germany that we met.
Yeah, we were sitting with at dinner.
Yeah.
And they were explaining to us why we should never go on a German cruise because Germans have no sense of humor. So they don't go on German cruises because they have a sense of humor, unlike most of their country folk.
Right. So they travel to...
I digress, of course.
Yes. Okay. So then Penelope begins sarcastically talking about COVID and the lockdown when they tell her that they have to take her temperature because now this is protocol. And she says, oh, wouldn't that be great if I got COVID on top of all of this? And then she tells them she has not been out of the house since Christmas.
Oh, God.
And it is now the day before Valentine's Day.
She hasn't been out of the house.
That's what she says. But I think she still went to the grocery store. But that's not really, that's only going out of the house for a purpose.
The joke was everyone's going to the grocery store with their mask, except their nose was hanging out or it was crooked or like, oh, yeah, no, this is making a difference.
Oh, boy. And so Penelope had obviously been very open about what had happened and the circumstances around the murder. Because she just keeps saying, I did it. I hope he dies. I did it.
It's fair.
That David was abusive and Penelope couldn't take it anymore. He had put her down one too many times and this time she snapped. And there was no regret and she kept saying she would do it again. Now, after being booked for the murder, investigators sat down with Penelope and were able to kind of piece together what exactly happened. So earlier that day, the couple's daughter and her husband had a gourmet lobster do-it-yourself kind of meal kit sent to the bungalow in celebration of Penelope's 66th birthday, which was that very day. That was her birthday.
And how old was she? 60?
66.
66.
Yeah, 66. My dad just called, so remind me to call him back.
Yeah, call your dad back.
That was the sound.
If it's really important, he'll call me.
Give it 3 seconds. He's going to call you.
Doubtful.
All right, so.
Happy Memorial Day.
Probably. So it's Penelope's 66th birthday. And around 2 p.m., David and Penelope started the celebration with a Zoom call to their daughter and son-in-law. And they were preparing the meal together. And there was champagne, and I'm sure there was other forms of alcohol. But they all had their own meals that they cooked together on Zoom, and we're going to eat it together.
Gotcha. So it was a COVID Zoom family gathering.
Right, like the birthday parties we attended during that time.
There's so much fun. Never mind.
At some point during the four-hour call, Penelope brought out steak and what is referred to as bubble and squeak.
Ah, back to the bubble and squeak.
Yeah, so what is bubble and squeak?
Yeah, what is it?
This is a British side dish of fried leftover vegetables, typically made from cabbage and potatoes.
Oh, yum.
And the name comes from the sounds that the vegetables make while cooking, especially the cabbage. So you fry it in like a pancake form. So what I envision like potato cakes.
Like and cabbage.
What are they called? Latkes?
Sure. I don't know.
That's like a potato pancake.
I have done that before. Have I done that before?
You've done it with mashed potatoes, like leftover mashed potatoes. You've done that before and it was really good.
You do like potato pancakes with leftover mashed potatoes.
Yeah. And all I kept thinking when people were explaining what bubble and squeak is, because I've never heard of that before, is he's cooking our garbage. Like from
that's what I tell
Uncle Buck.
Yeah, from Uncle Buck. That's what I tell my coworker. He goes, well, I got to go find something to eat, like a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I go, must be nice being rich. He goes, what'd you bring? I go, oh, I'm just cooking our garbage. And it's true. I just look through the fridge and then I just look at things and go, OK, I can put that and that and that together and make something out of it.
Yeah. So that's kind of what bubble and squeak is.
Now it's a joke at work. He's like, what garbage did you cook for lunch? And I go, oh, turns out So bubble and squeak is leftovers. Of course, it's fried because it's the UK and everything's oily.
and delicious. Well, if you put seasoning
they,
on it.
But see, they make fun of Americans that we deep fry everything, but everything they make is just dripping in oil. Like, I don't understand, but it's not good. It's terrible. It's absolutely the worst. There's no flavor. There's like, well, what it...
I'm not a fan of the breakfast. Everything else I enjoy. Just not a fried like what? Breakfast. What do you mean?
What do you enjoy?
Oh, like cream cheese and cucumber sandwiches and fish and chips. Okay, and
fish and chips is just bangers and mash. Deep fried. That's making fun of us. So that's deep fried.
Okay. Well, anyways, David began berating Penelope about the low-class dish and that she had ruined the meal. Mm. How are you going to bring out Bubble and Squeak when we're having lobster? They were calling it lobster crab. But, okay. I mean, but
those
lobster.
Are two different crustaceans.
I know. So I didn't understand what that meant. So
we're having lobster crab legs. What? That doesn't add up at all.
Well, Penelope seemed to brush it off. Mm-hmm. But then their iPad was low on battery and the two began arguing over who should have charged the device as they're in a Zoom call with their daughter and son-in-law who's witnessing this whole thing. Okay.
Well, they're clearly happily married at this point.
Clearly.
You can tell. Like there's nothing that could make them unhappy.
So it got a bit awkward. And the Zoom birthday celebration ended soon after. So it ended a little after 6 o'clock or 6 p.m. With the tension filling the house, Penelope decides it's time for bed and then proceeds to grab a kitchen knife and takes it up with her to her bedroom or she and David's bedroom and places it under her pillow. And she says it's for protection.
She says that to him.
She says this to the investigators that are
interviewing him. Oh, I'm sorry. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because he had that wild look in his eye.
Maybe he was horny.
I don't know.
Doubtful.
I think a lot of arguing was going on in that
Doubtful,
house and very little adult aerobics.
She's 66 and he was
78.
Oh, yeah. There's no more. Yeah.
Penelope then texts their daughter, "If it all goes tits, you have this message. Love you to the ends of the earth." Her daughter gets a bit nervous and then calls Penelope, and Penelope assures her that everything is fine and she's just going to go to bed.
So if something goes tits, that's bad?
Yes.
See, I would have associated it with something good.
Like tits up.
Right.
If it goes tits up, that's bad.
Oh.
Maybe that has to do with like lying in a grave and tits up. Maybe.
Oh, sure. Goodness. All right.
Penelope then falls asleep and woke up. And then tells investigators that when I woke up, I felt I couldn't do this anymore. And I intended to take my own life. I planned to slit my wrists. She then goes and finds David, who has made himself comfortable in the guest room.
Mm.
And she tells him about her plan to slit her wrists.
Sure.
And he responded with,
"Sounds great.
Get on with it then."
Oh, that's awesome.
Penelope was rightfully hurt and asked David for an apology.
What?
But instead he called her pathetic. Basically goading her into doing it.
Okay, so they're obviously just miserable. And she's like, "I've decided I'm going to take my life." And then he goes, "Well, get on with it, woman, for crying. Quit bothering me and do it already."
Basically.
And she goes, "Oh, I am so hurt by that. Like, you're the one that came in and said you're going to kill yourself. So if you're going to do it already. Stop waking me up." That seems reasonable. That sounds like something I would say.
So then I believe she leaves the room and she's just pissed. Like, she's just
But she's not
going to
kill
right?
herself.
But then she began to think, why should it be me that dies?
Right.
It should be David.
Yes.
It should be him.
Let go of whatever makes you stop.
This abusive and hurtful man.
Yeah.
So she walks back into the spare bedroom, having retrieved the knife from under her pillow. And David must have gotten out of bed. And Penelope tells the investigators that he provoked her, yelling at her to go back to bed and that she was never going to use the knife on him.
Oh.
So then Penelope sees red.
Oh, it was a challenge.
Yeah, so she sees red, and then she slashes him across the chest.
Okay.
Just a really deep laceration. And it was a pretty significant wound, but it was not life-threatening.
Gotcha.
He wasn't going to die from this wound. She left him injured and bleeding in the spare bedroom, and then she walked down to the lounge and wrote a confession.
So she treated this as a bad movie in that one knife slash kills someone instantaneously.
Maybe, or she just acted on impulse and then just wanted him to suffer a little bit and then walk down. So she does write a confession, okay?
Okay.
The blood evidence showed that David crawled to the phone and then he stood up and walked himself to the kitchen where he dialed 999.
Mm.
Penelope heard him on the phone and then followed with the knife. And while he was on the phone, he looked at her and said that she wouldn't dare stab him again and that the first stab was a fluke. So Penelope then stabs him two more times in the abdomen.
Okay.
But I did read in the court records that he also had a stab wound in his thigh. Okay. So he was actually stabbed three times and slashed one time. But they're calling the slash across the chest a stab.
What kind of knife was it? Big kitchen knife?
It's a kitchen knife.
Like a big...
Okay. Yeah, someone reported that it was a fillet knife, but I think it was bigger than that.
Mm.
So after the 18-minute 999 call, Penelope then went back to bed.
Of course she
did. And waited for the pounding on the front door to begin.
Okay.
Refusing to help David as he lay in the kitchen bleeding to death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I said, at some point during the attack, Penelope wrote a confession on a sheet of paper. She couldn't remember if she wrote it before the initial slash or if she wrote it after he was lying bleeding in the kitchen. She couldn't remember that timeline.
Gotcha.
And it read, "To whom it may concern, I have taken so much abuse over the years. Look at my records in Germany. But he was a good daddy. However, the mask slipped tonight. That was the final straw. No threats, just statements of fact. I accept my punishment. May he rot in hell."
To me, like someone who has had a lot of experience in separating themselves from somebody, also known as divorce, why not just do that, as we always say? You know?
Do what?
Sorry. Divorce him.
Oh, yes. Divorce is
why
the
stay
answer.
If all of that culmination, and then you go, okay, I've had enough. I'm going to kill him. But you've already practiced leaving someone that you're miserable with multiple times. I would think that you would do what comes natural, which is leave the person.
Right.
Now, I could say that she's not very good at making choices. Right?
Yes.
If you're 14 times married.
Well, four.
I know, I'm exaggerating. But you also seem to know how to leave them. You know?
And it wasn't like she didn't have a career. It wasn't like she was just, I'm going to say just, but being a homemaker and a stay-at-home mom is really hard work. But she was an accountant. Like, she had a great job.
Right.
So it's not like finances would have been a reason that she stayed or felt like she couldn't leave.
And she's not a quadriplegic.
No.
And he is a 6'7" bodybuilder and she physically can't do anything for herself. And he's, you know.
Oh, we're going
mean
to, that. Okay.
To her.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
she has the upper hand.
She
is what I'm trying to say.
She was capable of walking away. Because he was the one that had the medical issues,
right.
Not Penelope.
Yeah, he's 70.
Yeah.
She's,
no, I got it.
She's still spry, and she's of cruising age, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah.
She's in her prime cruising.
She can go dancing and find a partner on a cruise ship. So David had no defensive wounds. He did not try to fight back.
Yeah, because he has an electronically controlled brain and he's 78 with issues and what'd you say, prostate cancer and
yeah, I think it was like prostate and through, bladder. So, it was something
there. He's not doing great.
I always think I'm going to remember these details and then working on five cases at one time. But.
So the area down there is significantly diminished.
Yes.
Along with the area at the top.
Well, he had tumors in his brain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So he's not doing great.
So it is believed that if David would have had help, had somebody trying to help him, he possibly would have survived his wounds.
Yeah, rarely do people die from stab wounds.
Well, if they get immediate help.
That's what I mean, because you bring them to hospital and they go, yeah, we'll just close the openings.
After Penelope's arrest for the murder, she was very forthcoming. Right. Mm-hmm, like I said, answering all the investigators' questions, saying that David was cruel and abusive. He was a bully. She had had enough, that she had lost control after years of physical and emotional abuse. And it was time for him to die.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But by the next day, Penelope stopped talking and answering any of the investigators' questions because she had lawyered up.
That's a little like closing barn doors after the horses got out, isn't it?
Yes. And she hired a very high-end defense attorney.
Yeah.
And I think the defense attorney, it was a she.
She
said, shut your...
You're an idiot.
Shut your bleeping mouth.
Well, it kind of went downhill from the time she talked for 18 minutes saying, oh, I really hope he doesn't make it. You know, things like that.
Right.
Whereas if she had just said, I don't know what happened, I'm just going to sit here. Well, then they can't. What are they going to go off of? She could say anything. She could say, he kept telling me he was going to kill me. And then he dies. And then they have no. How are they going to know? So they go, mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, she dug herself a deep hole.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
I don't think she has the upper body strength to pull herself out.
No, she can't even climb a rope ladder.
But Penelope did give the investigators a prepared statement saying that her husband was abusive and controlling, that the extreme violence began after the death of his son by suicide in 1998, that the stabbing had been sparked by a fight after their daughter had bought them a gourmet meal for her birthday. So she's basically reiterating everything that she had already said, but this time it's in a statement form. And she's saying that David ate with their daughter and son-in-law over Zoom without her. This was part of the statement that she's now saying they ate without her in there.
And she was pissed.
And after the call ended, she went to bed with a knife under her pillow for protection and then explained what happened after that.
But they didn't sleep together. They slept in separate rooms.
Right. But she also said that this look would come in his eyes, and so she knew that she was going to get a beating later. But he's 78 years old.
Okay,
with tremors.
If you saw a glint in my eyes and you were like, I'm probably going to get a beating tonight, you would just wait.
No, I get the F out of there.
Yeah,
no.
Especially if there's a track record.
I would drive to our daughter's house.
Right, because she's 13.
No. If I was them.
Yes, I know. You would of course leave, I would think.
But it's easier to say that when you're not in that situation.
It is. That's why I'm trying to make sense of it.
I know. I have never been in a situation where I've been afraid of somebody like that. So I'd like to think that I would leave. I'd like to think that I would do all these things that we say that you should do, but you never know until you are in that same situation.
Okay, so here's where I'm coming from.
Okay.
I regularly, for example, like 2 days ago, I watched a pimp leading his prostitute down the side of the road with his hand around her neck.
Mm,
so sad. And you can tell because the way that it is in the area. I see that on a regular basis.
I know. It's awful.
And okay, so that poor girl is probably barely 18. Judging by the look of her. And he has a I will kill you look in his eye. And he stares in my eyes as I'm driving by. Like, don't you dare. That's just the look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that to me is the worst. That's happening as we speak. All right. This is an old couple in the UK. He's 78 with health problems.
Yeah.
That girl on the street, yes, it's way easier said than done. Mm-hmm. She has no idea. And whatever. She knew to call or talk to a 999 operator. She knew to hire a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Right.
So how is it she can't leave? The girl on the street, I get it, doesn't know what to do.
Right.
But this woman is a mature woman.
But they also call this coercive control, which is years or decades of abuse and manipulation that it just, it messes with like your brain. It messes with a lot of things. So like saying, it's really hard to say what you would do in that situation, but that's why this case was so huge in England, in the UK,
mm-hmm.
in Great Britain. Because first it had to do with COVID lockdowns, and then it had to do with coercive control. Okay, so let's get on. So Penelope was also seen by a doctor and was found to have bruises on her arms that they said could have been inflicted the night of the killing. Maybe David grabbed onto her, was shaking her, and she felt like her life was in danger. So then she slashed him to get away, and then it just escalated.
Yeah.
The trial against Penelope Jackson began on October 11th, 2021 at Bristol Crown Court. So this was just a few months later.
I'm surprised they were even able to get that court date
given
the whole like lockdown or we're all going to die kind of feeling in the UK.
Yeah, because it was still going on really strong at that time. So Penelope went to trial having admitted to manslaughter but denied that it was murder.
The prosecution
believed that the murder was not the act of a terrified and abused woman, that Penelope had actually premeditated the murder, using the note, the confession note, to show that the killing was not spontaneous, but rather a deliberate act of vengeance. Combined with her cool and calm demeanor on the 999 call and the police body cam footage, this was someone who was fully aware of her actions. And many of the couple's friends and family members took the stand, giving the jury an inside peek into the 24-year marriage, saying that David and Penelope had normal ups and downs but seemed like your average loving couple, and that it had actually been Penelope who was the aggressor and not David. That Penelope was a very kind of larger than life character, and everything had to revolve around her and what she liked and what she wanted. She enjoyed making others uncomfortable and would pick out a person's soft spot and would hone in on that and then just pick away at it. Just pick, pick, pick. So I'm summarizing what all of these people were saying up on the stand who were there for the prosecution. But that the couple did drink a lot and that they would bicker. They were famous for their bickering.
Isn't that kind of a stereotype, though?
Yeah, but it was more like funny bickering or just making fun of each other that could get uncomfortable at times. But, you know, we as a couple would be like, oh, that's their foreplay. But I don't want to go over there.
Yeah.
I don't want to hang out with that couple.
No one wants to witness elderly foreplay.
Shut up.
Or five play for that matter.
It was also pointed out that on occasion, Penelope would tell David in front of others that if he did not obey or left her, she would do a Lorena Bobbitt on him. So she would cut off his weenus.
Okay. But in this case, he's 78 and has had prostate cancer. I bet that thing doesn't work. I mean, I'm no doctor.
Yeah, but nobody wants their appendage
taken off. No, obviously not.
And the jury were also told instances where Penelope would leave the door open after taking a shower. Like if they were staying at other people's homes or people were staying at their house.
Yeah. I would never invite them over again.
And instead of giving one of her stepdaughters words of encouragement when her relationship was having trouble, Penelope instead said that it was much easier when your husband kills himself.
Well, she seems like a lovely person to be invited over to things.
Now, David's second wife took the stand and told the courtroom that David had come clean about the affair with Penelope after Penelope had called the house to talk to David. And then David told this particular wife that he had never really been interested in a relationship with Penelope, but she had demanded that he tell the wife. I think David was a serial cheater. I think he cheated
according to the poor son.
Everyone. Yeah. Just not. I don't think he cheated on Penelope. He might have, but that was never mentioned. The two divorced, and then David went on to marry Penelope. Mm. Now, when asked about their relationship after the divorce, the second wife said that David was a kind man, and he was very loving and very considerate, and that she had been very happy when they were married. So she didn't have anything bad to say about him.
Other than he liked to roam.
Yes.
A bit.
Yes, but that he was a good dad.
Okay.
He wasn't abusive. He wasn't violent. And this was the second wife. The son and his two older daughters were from the first wife.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The first wife actually didn't have very great things to say about David, but she was never brought in to testify. It was the second wife that was brought in. So that's very interesting because we really have two different sides.
Well, maybe they went and talked to her and thought, yeah, this isn't going to help, so we're not going to use her testimony.
Probably, but it would have countered what the second wife was saying. If the first wife was like, actually, he was kind of a dick, and he was abusive or did have tendencies of outbursts, it would kind of conflict with what the second wife was saying.
Right.
So they would kind of cancel each other out and leave you with reasonable doubt, right?
Sure.
Okay, so she said that the two remained close even after the divorce, and David over the years would open up to her about his marriage with Penelope, saying that he was miserable and that he was afraid of her, that she had threatened to end his career and to ruin his reputation, and that's why he stayed with her.
Oof.
So she had something over him, I guess. Now, their daughter also took the stand for the prosecution, saying that they did fight over trivial matters, but she had not witnessed any violence in a really long time. Not since she was much younger and they were living in Germany, which kind of goes along with the confession note when she says, look at my records in Germany, because there were things that happened in Germany, like him threatening her with a knife, pushing her up against the wall, that kind of stuff. But the daughter did remain close to Penelope after everything happened, but she did get up there on the stand for the prosecution. And really, the daughter was just telling the truth.
Yeah.
She told her truth, which I think makes her a very viable witness because she still loved her mom and still wanted a relationship with her mom. But then she's up there saying, well, I never witnessed any of the stuff that my mom is saying. I just thought that was interesting.
Well, unless they're very one-sided, meaning unless the daughter really, really relates to the mom and not the dad, it would be very hard to come out and defend the mom for doing what she did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And vice versa. You'd almost kind of have to come out evenly split a little bit.
Well, especially because the daughter and the son-in-law were on a Zoom call with them for 4 hours.
Right.
And witnessed, you know, them being irritated at each other because the iPad was going to die, and witnessed her dad berating Penelope over Bubbles and Squeak.
Mm-hmm.
So she witnessed that, but to her, that was very normal. It was not anything out of the ordinary for the bickering.
Okay.
Now, the defense took the stance that Penelope's reaction was a loss of control, that she did do it, but the intention was not to kill David, and that Penelope actually does not have any recollection of the killing. It was more of an out-of-body experience, loss of control, detachment from reality, and that she had spent years bottling up her feelings and they finally boiled to the surface. And all she really remembers is being cold.
Except that she was on the phone with the operator for the whole time, continually saying, yeah, I'm not going to go help him and I hope he dies.
Right. And then giving investigators a detailed account of what happened.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like someone having an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, that just didn't make much sense to me.
If she just was curled up in the fetal position on the floor, refusing to do anything, then you might say, okay, look, this person's kind of snapped and is incoherent and not of their right mind. But she's like, oh, yes, I did it, and I hope he dies.
Yeah, if she was there babbling.
Right.
And
so how is this an out of, how does she not remember or not? Anyway, because I think after 18 minutes, you might start to, you know, center yourself a little bit.
Well, Penelope took the stand in her own defense.
Oh, good.
Saying
always fun.
Saying that she had spent a majority of the relationship walking on eggshells around David, afraid to trigger his anger and violence, and her stomach was constantly in knots. She was not allowed to order the food that she wanted when they went out to restaurants.
Sounds like me.
Not allowed to watch the shows that she liked because he was in control of the channel changer. Penelope was not allowed to do jigsaw puzzles or listen to the radio while ironing. She was only allowed to go to the gym and the grocery store.
I have a question.
And that's it. What?
How many things need to be ironed when you are not leaving your house during the COVIDs?
Just spray them down with water.
But what difference does it make?
And let them hang.
Who irons?
We don't.
No, but nobody irons. The only thing you'd iron is a dress shirt.
Yeah, but they were like something. Boomers, right? So don't boomers iron?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Who cares?
No, but that's my
just joking.
My question is, she can't do these things while she's ironing. What the hell is she ironing for?
I don't know, babe.
They're retired. I would never iron a shirt. Well, I wouldn't iron a shirt anyway. But yeah, you only iron shirts for weddings.
Okay, so she also said
that
David had forced her to have sex with him over the years. And that she had lost countless friends because of David not approving of them.
Oh.
David, on occasion, would shake her, strangle her to unconsciousness, kick Penelope, and then say he was sorry. Penelope explained her reasoning for staying by saying that she loved him and wanted it to work out, saying that she blamed herself for her third husband's suicide.
Okay.
Because she told him that the affair wouldn't have happened if he hadn't have gone to Saudi Arabia for work. And
right.
So I think she's saying she was afraid that David was going to take his own life if she left him like her third husband.
But then she wanted to kill him and hope he died. Okay.
Now, there were WhatsApp messages found between David and Penelope saying that she felt like she was living with the devil incarnate, that she could not continue to take his nastiness no matter how much she loved him. There was also another message that read that she could not grow old being afraid and that alcohol affects people differently. I get happy and you get nasty. Your choice. I have stayed for love, yet you throw that back at me. You need to stop.
I thought WhatsApp instantly disappears after you write it.
I did too, but we did have a listener that told me that you can go back in and get.
Am I thinking of stuff. A different one?
Like it's not encrypted or something like that. Because we had talked about it before where we said that we believed that it did disappear, but I guess it doesn't.
I just heard an ad for one of those. Maybe it was it WhatsApp? And they're talking about how you can just have conversations and nothing is kept.
I don't know. So, I'm not that secretive.
Anyway.
Penelope's phone also showed that she had looked up information on living with an abuser, her legal rights, and divorce lawyers. And this had happened after the December incident with the fire poker.
Okay.
Penelope then said that the night of David's murder, that she still could not understand why she had slashed him or why she had attacked him, and still had a hard time remembering exactly what happened and in the proper timeline. That she was shocked and appalled by what she had said during the 999 call and could not remember when she had actually written the confession note. Possibly before the attack started or in between the slashing and the final two stabs. She remembered that David was upset that the gourmet meal did not include a potato side dish. So she told him that she would make a posh style bubble and squeak. But when she went to the kitchen to retrieve the steak, because he wanted steak too, and the bubble and squeak side dish, David acted like he had never heard her say this before, which then triggered his anger, saying that this was a peasant side dish. You don't serve a peasant side dish with lobster and champagne. And then the evening went downhill from there, saying in court that I lost it. It was like a red mist. I just couldn't take it anymore. And her 66th birthday ended in David's death by her own hands.
Happy birthday to her.
On October 29th, after 3 weeks of testimony, the 12-person jury, made up of 8 women and 4 men, found Penelope guilty of manslaughter with a 10-2 vote, which meant that the jury believed there was a loss of control, that there had been a qualifying trigger, and that someone of the same sex, age, and circumstances would have reacted in a similar way. Penelope was then sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 18 years, with a chance at parole in 2036 when Penelope is 82 years old. After the sentencing, the judge made a statement saying, "You intended to kill. You did so in anger. The lack of regret is stark. While I accept that you were in a difficult marriage, there is no evidence that you were acting under any serious threat at the time of the murder. What you did was an act of cold-blooded revenge."
So I'm kind of surprised that, you know, in the sexist way, you would say, well, a bunch of men on the jury would say, oh, she misinterpreted her husband or blah, blah, blah. But in this case, it was majority women.
It was.
And you'd think women would have compassion for her. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, those mean old husbands are just abusive and always want sex and food cooked, you know, all this stuff. Nope. She wasn't able to convince them. So I'm kind of surprised. Maybe that's why they did put more women on, just essentially
we're not
stacking the jury against you. We actually put more women on there, which would probably have more compassion if the evidence showed such.
The entire 999 recording was played for the jury.
Yeah.
And the entire, all the body cam footage was also played for the jury.
Well, if I heard the recording played from the call and it was in your voice, I probably would have found her guilty too.
Yeah.
If she sounded the way you sounded.
Well, especially because there weren't a lot of people backing her. There weren't a lot of people saying, yes, he was an awful husband. He was awful to her. I mean, they did have the reports from Germany at the beginning of their relationship, which was horrible. I mean, he was not a good guy to her during that time, but he got help. I'm not saying that she should have stayed. I mean, if anyone holds a knife to your throat, that's over. It's done.
I would hope so, yeah. Even if you did that and then got help, I would think that you should get help and then be alone.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I think, but well, yeah, so the jury got to hear all of that, mm-hmm. which I'm sure kind of helped make her guilty of manslaughter. She wasn't guilty of premeditation. She got manslaughter. So,
but still got life in prison.
She still got life in prison, so but she does have the chance of parole.
I'm surprised that she got life for manslaughter.
I was too.
Because that's not something you would typically associate.
No, but
I would think premeditated murder would be life in prison.
Now, most of the write-ups that I read did say she was found guilty of manslaughter and sentenced to 18 years in prison. But when you look at the court documents that I found, it says that she was sentenced to life in prison with the minimum of 18 years, and then she's up for parole. Which,
yeah,
you know,
I'm
I guess
kind of
maybe is the same. I don't know.
I'm kind of thinking she's not a threat to society.
She was a threat to one person.
She was a threat to one fella, mm-hmm. that was just years of whatever. And even if she misinterpreted it and killed him, it seems like, okay, fine, manslaughter. But she's not a threat. She's not 25. She's 66.
Right.
So give her 10 years and manslaughter and let her out. I don't know. And then hope the next fella doesn't, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, he had issues with his brain. He had tumors in his brain.
Yeah.
He had a medical device implanted in his brain. You have things going on in your brain. That is going to be a change in personality.
Of course. Now, but I'm not suggesting someone should stay with that person.
No.
They're not guaranteed. I mean, he should be happy-ish. At least 51% happy.
Well, I think for me, it was the amount of people that were defending David,
mm-hmm.
and not defending her. But yeah. Like we say, we don't really know what goes on behind closed doors. But her daughter had a firsthand experience and grew up in that house. So I don't know. I believe the daughter. I'm just going to go with the daughter.
As I've said before, most houses, especially the thin ones built here in the old, good old U.S. of A., there's no insulation in the interior walls.
Mm-mm.
So it's very hard for especially children to not hear their parents fighting and arguing.
Right.
They hear everything. Plus their ears are better, mm-hmm. than ours are. And the doors, we have hollow doors. Unless you're in a really, really well insulated room, even then it doesn't matter. Kids can read body language. So yeah, if they're like, yeah, I didn't really see anything, that's probably fairly accurate-ish.
Well, interesting fact. In June of 2023, Penelope's appeal against her conviction was dismissed by the Court of Appeal. The judge ruled that the original trial judge had properly directed the jury regarding the defense of loss of control, and there was no basis to consider the conviction unsafe. Now, what her attorney was trying to bring up during the appeal was that the 999 transcript and recording and then some of the body cam footage was released to the media during the second week of trial.
Okay.
And that the jury could have been swayed by what people were saying about the 999 call and the body cam footage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what her appeal was based on. And the appeal judge was like, no. Mm-mm.
Okay.
You're where you should be.
All right.
The judge did exactly what they should have done.
All right.
So all my information came from all the write-up and articles that I could find on this case. Plus, I found court transcripts and articles that were written based on these transcripts. I was also able to find the second part of a documentary on YouTube called Bubble and Squeak Murder, The Killing of David Jackson. And you can find it on Amazon Prime UK, but you can't find it on Amazon Prime US or whatever we are. You have to order the UK version. And I knew you'd get mad at me if I did that.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
Well,
I'm
no,
just joking.
You might find it on the YouTubes.
No, I found, that's what I just said. I found the second part.
Oh, I wasn't listening.
Of course you weren't. I found part two on YouTube and was able to watch that.
Okay.
But I couldn't get the whole thing.
Right.
But that one kind of comes at it as like David was the aggressor because he has a brother that he hadn't been in contact with for 10 years who kind of was just saying that he was an a-hole and, you know, that kind of stuff. But anyways, if you're in the UK, you can find it on your Amazon Prime. We cannot. This case was huge for a really long time. And I think it had been asked of me to cover this in the beginning when we were, when we had first started.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there you go. I did it. The Bubble and Squeak murder.
Well done.
Thanks, darling.
Good job.
And if you want an unedited, unfiltered, unscripted, well, this is unscripted, but unscripted view, then you should go listen to it after the show, which should pop up right after this.
After this show.
After this show. Mm-hmm. But as always, thanks for listening and be careful.
For marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always the better option
to murder.
Bye.
Bye.